This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
We mentioned on this program a week or two ago that, I guess it was a week ago, that yours truly attended a high school reunion. It was 50 years on from high school days. And it was, as always, those things are very interesting experiences to see how people have changed and grown, et cetera, or not. One issue that came up or did not come up was that I was made aware of the fact that some of my cohorts were Trumpers. And I thought it would be a good idea not to engage in any political conversation with said individuals, particularly because I know them to be very bright people, and I just was puzzled by the whole phenomenon and didn't want to go there. Anyway, one thing that I was thinking about at this reunion was how it was we were supposedly taught in high school how to be informed citizens and how to live in a democracy. It's important to have an informed public, or you're not going to have such a good democracy. I also got to thinking about my high school poli-sci teacher, who was also at that event and who's also been on this program before and has always been insightful in the past. And I think it's very much time for him to be insightful again. So I'm happy to be able to say welcome back to Radio Parallax, Mark Mattingly.
Well, thank you. And yes, I was at the reunion, and I have a hard time with what you're talking about, because the students I taught, there's this whole range of intelligence at the time I was teaching, of their ability to you know, go to college or not, their ability to get, you know, the concepts that I was trying to explain in high school that, you know, weren't necessarily, you know, really high level things, because the state of California and the United States has given us a set of values to teach kids about government, and you hope that you can get the basic ones in. And when you see who's running the country and who has been elected to the country, running the country from different places in America, and their lack of understanding of the Constitution, and their lack of understanding of kind of the purpose of government, it really depresses me. And so at the reunion, I made sure I just tried to, you know, not go there with those kinds of topics, you know.
Well, we should mention that when you were teaching us poli-sci back in the day, Richard Nixon was in the White House. And, of course, there was quite a bit of issues shortly after my high school days about what Nixon had been up to and obstruction of justice and all sorts of things. And I have to say, looking back at Nixon and looking right now at Donald J. Trump, I'd say Nixon looks pretty good.
Well, he actually got a college degree, and he showed it to people. It's just such a different world. Yes, Nixon, he did lots of things wrong. I'm glad that he was found out about the Watergate, et cetera. But on the other side, I don't know if Trump even understands what's going on and the damage he's causing. You know, because he's just doing it to me for his own self, you know, to keep us out of jail and to make money and a lot of other issues. But one of them isn't to make the American public give us better standards of life, for sure.
But, you know, even 10 years ago, looking at the things that Trump routinely says and does and all of his antics and all these outrageous things that come out of his mouth, this was something that was unheard of even a decade ago for a politician. Politicians are trying to reach out to wide audiences normally, and Trump has just rewritten all the rules.
Well, my mother's generation, and she was born in 1910, my mother's generation, if you had the kind of lifestyle he had related to women and the divorces and what was said about him before he became president, she wouldn't have voted for him even if she believed in everything he believed in. So the fact that he could go through all that stuff in 2016 and 15 and still win the election, it surprised me that the American public wouldn't care about that. And the people that I know that like Trump sort of didn't care about that. We've changed, and I haven't, so I don't understand it, I guess.
Well, looking back to high school days and poli-sci and learning about U.S. history and learning about world history, one thing that troubled me then, we were at that point 20-odd years, 25 years, I guess you'd say, out of the end of World War II, and that great catastrophe that overtook the world of World War II was based on the fact that Germany went nuts in the 1930s. They put a fascist government in charge. Adolf Hitler became dictator, and all sorts of bad things followed from that. And I remember wondering at the time, you know, how that happened to Germany. And I think at this point, I'm feeling like I have a little bit better understanding of how that happened, seeing what's been happening around here.
World War One and the collapse of the economies. And the interesting thing is, all the countries after World War One were, you know, that were in debt in Europe and the United States, they rose a bunch of tariffs so that their workers could get paid for their work and make their products. And it totally stifled trade, and it caused the collapse and the Great Depression. And what's Trump want to do? He wants to have tariffs. He wants to, you know, close in, you know, and so does a lot of these other countries. You find these kind of fascist groups that are kind of getting more and more, you know, into those governments, France and Germany, et cetera. And it just surprises me that, are we going to end up in a trade war where we end up in the biggest huge depression in the history of the world? I don't know, but it's we seem to be headed there if he wins.
Well, you know, we talked in high school history about the Versailles Treaty at the end of World War One and how this undue burden was put on Germany. And there's, by the way, we should put in a plug for some excellent documentaries that are currently can be found on YouTube on this very topic. They do some good work showing how it was that by blaming the whole war on Germany, which was frankly very unfair, and then putting the squeeze in the German economy, well, the U.S. economy benefited, the British economy benefited, the French economy benefited, and it just absolutely opened up the door for fascism in Germany.
Yes. Well, you know, if you're German, how many battles of World War One were fought in Germany? None. None. I guess their army went into Belgium.
Yeah.
They went into France. They all those things. And when the war ended, they all came home. So the people living in Germany, they didn't have a war in their country, you know. So, thanks to Woodrow Wilson and the British and the bankers of those groups, they made it. You said exactly, the fault was going to be on Germany, and the people that lived there didn't get it, because why would we be paying all this debt when our cities are fine, you know? So anyway, weird.
Well, they pointed out that it was France, Britain, England versus Austria-Hungary, Germany, and the Turks were allied with them. And it was just, there were a lot of players involved. And it was very unfair to have blamed Germany for that. And now, you know, I mean, the thing about, I think, fascism and strongmen taking over is they're very good at finding people to blame for all of their problems. I mean, back in the 30s, the 20s even, Germany was blaming the Allies with justification, and the socialists and all sorts of people. And of course, the Jews got mixed up in all of that, being falsely blamed for all sorts of chicanery. And right now we're living in a country in America where the bad guys are immigrants.
Yes, we're all immigrants, more or less. I mean, and most of us are European immigrants. If you go back to your forefathers, and they came over here, and if they were the Irish, like mine were, they had the crappiest jobs, and you know, on the East Coast, and they struggled, and they were made fun of, and they were dumb, and all those stereotypes. But they made it, and we sort of evolved past that. We thought to where, you know, we had made it more of a, you know, the American dream was for everybody, and Trump is going back to that nativism again. You know, I'm pointing fingers at the people that where I live in a facility that's for older people. Our units are cleaned by people that speak Spanish. The workers that fix my leaky toilet speak Spanish. The people that clean that do all the yard work and trim the trees out here speak Spanish. What's going to happen if they all have to go back to Mexico or whatever country they're from in Latin America? I mean, who's going to do those jobs? What's going to happen to this economy? And then, you know, why should we hate these people that do these jobs? And they're nice people. You know, I don't get it, you know.
Yeah, there was a meme that was circulated a year or two ago that was pretty funny, where somebody was saying, yeah, you know, I was earning a great living picking fruit until all those immigrants showed up, which is ridiculous.
Well, I know that my children who have college degrees and their children, my grandchildren, they're not going to go to Salinas and pick lettuce. The people coming up through the borders from different areas into this country, those are the jobs they take because That's the jobs they have to take. And they do so willingly. And the fact that we don't want them to come here and take those jobs that nobody else wants, and we need them. We need to harvest our crops. We need to clean the hotels and cook the food in the restaurants. I mean, all those jobs that most American kids don't want to do, and if they do it, they're doing it while they're in high school maybe, or, you know, a little bit of college. But that's about it. You can't make a living and live on your own working in those jobs. So the fact that he's making it the enemy, it's just sad.
Yeah, I think of in the last few years, numbers of time I had to hire people to come in and do things I couldn't do for myself, removing trees or working on the pool or whatever. Inevitably, the work crew are Hispanics. There may be a boss that's not, but the people doing the work are people from Latin America.
Exactly. And often, you know, they're working for cash. And even the people that work where I am here, these women that clean our places, maybe they have to get Social Security numbers and they have to do all that. But they're not citizens, so they won't get that money that they're putting into Social Security, or that's taken out automatically out of their wages. So it's not like they're taking our money, but they're actually giving us money. So, you know, or the money that they're setting aside, they're not going to be able to get back. So it's not like we're losing out on this at all, you know, as a nation.
Well, you and I are having a conversation that seems to be reality-based. That's a far cry from what we're hearing from the mouth of J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. They're just demonizing these people, blaming them for the housing crisis, blaming them for everything. And sadly, it seems to resonate with a certain subset of the public.
It's like his Bible that he's selling for $70 a piece or something. it's made in China, where he wants to set tariffs against China. All that crap that he was selling, you know, before he became president, ties and shirts and et cetera, none of that was made here. And so he's never been a guy promoting, you know, workers from America making the products. And it won't work anyway. We're just too dependent on each other now to go back to that, you know, that idea. We need to have trade between nations and get along better. And that's that with China is what we need to do more than anything else. So,
well, one thing you can say about Trump is he's pretty ignorant about just about anything you want to talk about, and he keeps saying that tariffs won't cost the public anything; it'll just hurt the Chinese. Which ask anyone in the field of economics whether that's the case, and they will say, "No." Anybody keeps saying it.
If we don't buy the products because the tariffs are too high, then those workers in China aren't going to be making them either. I mean, it's a no-win situation for everybody,
right,
that he's doing. I mean, he just got, like, that happened in the 20s, where everybody had such high tariffs in the world, especially Europe and America, that trade couldn't happen. And when it didn't happen, then it with the imbalance of it, was it collapsed, obviously, in our economy. But it was a world depression. It wasn't just America.
Holy mackerel, my former teacher and still a parent teacher. I guess that was the Holly Smoot law they passed in the 30s that created tariffs everywhere and crashed the economies of the world.
Yes.
I'd forgotten about that. Well, let's hope we don't have a replay of that.
Holly Smoot. Well, my joke is going to be Holly Smoot, Batman.
Wow. Yeah, that's something we should research for future installments of the show.
Well, part of the thing, too, that's bothering me right now is the Constitution, the very first amendment. When Jefferson got back from France and realized there was no protection of the individual from the government after we had a revolution, he and Madison and Jay, these guys wrote the amendments to the Constitution. The very first one you read that I taught my whole life, Congress shall pass no law establishing a religion. Because the British had Anglicans, you know, the French had Catholicism, the Germans had Lutheranism, Swiss had Calvinism, and all the Puritans, all those different groups come here, practice their religion, and it wasn't going to be part of a government saying this is your religion. Now we have a Speaker of the House who believes that God is his religion, the real God, and he believes that we should make this part of our country. And, you know, Congress shall make no law establishing a religion and shall leave the free exercise thereof to you and me so we can practice what we want, including atheism or or Judaism, or you know, agnostic. I mean, we can be Buddhism. We can be whatever we want, and the government's not supposed to make that be a negative. But boy, they've changed that. They've changed that, the Republicans.
Wow. I had not thought of Jefferson's connection to France and seeing their revolution and probably realizing that, it's important that citizens have rights so people here don't get the guillotine. Never thought about that.
He was just sent over there to negotiate with the French after the revolution. And so a year later, they wrote the Bill of Rights. They did this 1 year later. It was added a year later. And it was because they said we had a revolution and there's no guarantee from a despot taking over and doing this to us again. We need some protection for the individual. And that's what that was.
Well, the connection between religious faith and despotism is certainly has always been a pretty strong link. And these days, when you look at who the hardcore Trump supporters are, these are seemingly Christian fundamentalists, people who they've described the Trump phenomenon as a cult. And it does seem that it's just a matter of faith that this guy's going to do the right thing.
Yes. It's the fact that you see pictures of him with a halo as the next savior, as a Christian savior, when he's never been to church in his life. And that's the last thing he believes in that way, is a strong belief in God that he's been faithful to. I mean, Biden's definitely a Catholic. He cares. He goes to church. He does all that stuff. So it's just weird that Trump gets a free pass for all these things from that religious right group because he's going to get them into the White House.
Tim Walz had a great line recently about how it was, well, I'm sure Trump didn't realize the Bibles were printed in China because he never opened them up, never looked inside.
Right. Like I said, in the old days, you know, you had to have certain qualifications to become a president. And Trump, all of those things are out the window that way. And, you know, and he's never really held office. You know, he had a business. And when he became a president, he used his skills of getting money for himself more than he did for us. Whereas these guys that are members of some state legislature, they move up to the Congress or to the Senate, and then they end up as president. They've gone through all those years of being a public servant. And maybe they've done some things bad, as opposed to good, but Trump had a whole other way of getting there. And I'm afraid he's going to, you know, take the Civil War on his way out the door.
or a few top secret memos while he's at it.
Well, you know what? His love affair with Putin is strange. For what reason? I mean, they say that when he was in Moscow with the Women's International Beauty Contest or whatever he was running there, that he and Putin became buddies. But did Putin loan him money for his bankrupt problems that he was having? Did Putin, you know, have him with these beautiful women that they have tapes of? I mean, I have no idea. But I know he was wined and dined and told he was handsome and smart and all those things, which the Chinese also did to him. And he eats that up. And Harris in the debate actually pointed that out. He's easily fooled by just telling him how smart he is and how handsome he is.
This gives me a chance to plug our interview with Craig Unger on this very topic some years back on the influence of Russia on Donald Trump. If you didn't catch it the first time, we'd suggest our listeners to go to radioparallax.com and look up Craig Unger. That was a worthwhile interview. But talking about religious faith and how important that seems to be to the GOP, they've really made an effort since 50 years ago, when Nixon was president, he decided that the future of the Republican Party would be a so-called Southern strategy. The South had voted Democrat out of anger at Abe Lincoln in the Civil War for like decades. And the Republicans realized that as the Democrats embraced civil rights, this was an opportunity for them to take advantage of. And boy, have they.
The Democratic Party in the South was a one-state party. You had to be a Democrat to win, and you were white. And civil rights didn't matter. You know, and those Democrats hated Republicans because Lincoln was a Republican and the Republicans stopped them from seceding from the, you know, America and starting their own country. So there was that hatred of, you know, of the North and hatred of Republicans until the Civil Rights Movement, you know, Kennedy, Johnson, and then in along came Goldwater and flipped it. He flipped all those Southern states from being Democratic to being Republican, and the white, you know, racist Democrat just became a white racist Republican, and that's still a problem down there.
Yes. Looking back on it, you were an educator for many decades, teaching people like me, another high school kids. Do you think there's been a failure of people to just grasp what it means to be able to evaluate data? I mean, what has happened to us? In high school, we're supposed to be able to evaluate what information you can rely upon and cannot. And boy, that seems to be absent from the scene.
California has very high standards, obviously, for becoming a teacher and what you need to do. And there's standards when you teach that you have to kind of follow through for the state of California related to subject matter, whether it's math or science. But teaching science in the South, if you believe in creationism versus Darwinism or evolution, I mean, what's being taught there? I mean, the Constitution, what part of the Constitution are you teaching? And what do you know yourself? I mean, I don't know how many of these people with their teaching credentials in these other states, what do they know? I'm afraid we're dumbing down when we need to be smart. You know, the kids going to college that I taught, you know, before I retired, were headed to big schools, and they were smart kids. But there's that group up there that's smart, and they understand because they have more of a worldview. And then the other kids that just, it's confusing, and they don't get it. And now they're following it on Fox News. Now they're following it on these TikTok streams. And all of a sudden, information has got no basis of being researched or proven, and they believe it. So it's scary to me.
Well, we're 3 weeks out from the election. We're going to see what happens. I'm very fearful seeing how the polls seem to be going against Harris at the moment, but that could mean nothing. Don't know. Don't know what the story is. But after the election, you want to come back and talk about what happened?
Sure. I'm hoping that Taylor Swift and the women that really have that feeling about, you know, not wanting the government to interfere in their decision making about their body and about what they're doing and who they are, that's going to really make a difference. That there's kind of this silent group these polls aren't really able to poll, but that's kind of my hope, I guess, that it is going to be a surprise.
I hope you're right. I think the abortion issue is Harris's biggest issue. Trump has lied. Everything he says about what he did in abortion is wrong. The part that, just as we close, that blows my mind that he has not been held accountable for is the massive number of extra deaths from COVID that took place due to Trump's mismanagement. But
exactly. The thing that bothers me the most is January 6th was real. I read Liz Cheney's book on it, which was going in the Republican Party, you know, in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, talking to all those, and all of them knew what happened, and all of them knew that he lost the election, and none of them would say anything. And she had the guts to kind of, she lost the election herself, but she had the guts to come out and say the truth. But that book was excellent. But the fact that people could see that on television, and it didn't upset them enough to not want Trump to be a president again. I mean, that in itself. You know, Mike Pence, and they had the gallows there, so many of those congressmen came so close. If they'd have gotten a hold of Pelosi, what would have happened to her? What would those guys have done to her? You know what I mean? It just it scares me that elected officials can't have a viewpoint, and if we don't like it, we can vote against them. But if they win, we have to accept the majority.
I guess, but it's like the guy, as far as I'm concerned, he should be in an orange jumpsuit behind bars. And yet, as we speak right now, it's basically 50-50 he might be returned to office.
I'm with you. So, yes, let's rehash this and see what falls through the cracks here or doesn't. And hopefully it will be positive, not negative.
All right. Well, we'll invite you back in 3 weeks and talk about it some more. I do want to note something I never passed along before, that after your last appearance on this program, one of our longtime listeners wrote in and said that he wished that you'd been his high school teacher.
I had a great career. And I got to say that, you know, I feel good about that for sure. So thank you.
Mark Mattingly, we'll talk again. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank
you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, in the time we have left, I should mention the fact that yours truly did travel to a theater, an actual movie theater, to see The Apprentice, which has a very limited distribution, I think. We had high hopes in this program that the reason that Trump was suing the makers of the film to keep it out of U.S. distribution was because it would be a hard-hitting look at his life. Well, it's a look at his life, and sometimes it's pretty hard-hitting, but I must confess to coming away a tad disappointed. To quote from some movie critics, starting with Brian Tallarico, who writes on RogerEbert.com, despite the controversy it has stirred, the Donald Trump biopic arriving in theaters doesn't know what to say about its subject. Its first half, which focuses on the tutelage of young Trump, received from cutthroat attorney Roy Cohn in the 1970s, makes for interesting cinema. Unfortunately, the film's creative team then makes the baffling choice to jump to the mid-80s, shortchanging character development. Despite strong turns from Sebastian Stan as Trump and Jeremy Strong as Cohn, the second half plays like a parody, leaving the whole exercise feeling as hollow as a late-night comedy sketch. Writing in Entertainment Weekly, Maureen Lee Linker said, "The Apprentice resembles Netflix's The Crown, an enjoyable imagining of behind-closed-doors conversations that not to be taken too seriously. Certainly, it doesn't tell us anything we don't already know." Roy Cohn taught Donald Trump to live by three rules. One, attack, attack, attack. Two, admit nothing, deny everything. And three, always claim victory and never admit defeat. For everyone who's been watching Trump for the past 9 years, it's a sickeningly familiar playbook. Did have to confess that after seeing the movie and being reminded of how you declare victory, no matter how things have gone, certainly was reminiscent of what came out of Trump's mouth after he was hammered by Kamala Harris in their debate. Despite getting what was obvious to almost everybody as a serious butt-whipping, Trump then claimed that he had won decisively and, you know, no reason to have another debate because, you know, he'd won. My own personal criticism would be that if you watch the film, seeing Roy Cohn in action, tutoring young Donald Trump, you'd almost think that Roy Cohn was responsible for what Trump became. But I really think, honestly, that Trump was the way he was before he met Roy Cohn and just used Roy Cohn to flesh out how he should do things, to learn some techniques. I think it's fair to say that in this bit of studenting, he proved to be a good pupil. It is amusing that as he continues to attack Kamala Harris for not being all that bright, the fact of the matter is that not all that bright Kamala Harris has two undergraduate degrees and a law degree. Donald Trump reportedly went to college at the Wharton School. It is a known fact that he has threatened the school with a lawsuit if they were to release his grades. I do know that one professor who taught Donald Trump at the Wharton School later said that he was the dumbest pupil he ever had. And that while Trump, being Trump, claimed that he graduated the Wharton School with high honors, it is a known fact that the graduation materials of his year of graduation do not include him among the people receiving any honors. I know that probably doesn't make the top 1,000 of the 30,000 or so lies that Trump has saddled us with over the past decade, but it's something. And in the minute and a half we have left, I think we're going to inject a little bit of comedy relief to this show and cite the effort of the Canadian goat, Joshua. Apparently, the 10-year-old goat living in Newfoundland achieved local fame when he joined a passing half marathon. Apparently, the goat got excited when he saw runners passing his pumpkin patch and he broke free from his tether. He trotted for 2.5 miles before his owners saw photos in social media of Joshua pacing alongside the competitors. They then collected him and dropped him 800 feet from the finish line so he could complete the race.
That's cheating.
And yes, while that is cheating, Joshua received a gold medal for his efforts. Yay! The local mayor commented that they were just delighted that the goat of the race is really a goat. And I think we need to take a short break. Let us do so. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett.